last team at the moment. Why is it arrived before the international break? The players are at a high level, come to Ghana, they drop on their level right after the level increases again. It's becoming a very dangerous and unwanted pattern that we're seeing with the national team. So today we'll try and dissect that and see what exactly is happening. If it's not the players, is it a fault of the GFA? Is it a coach? Is it a pitch? Is it just playing in Africa? What exactly is wrong with these players? We'll be trying to get answers about the ongoing WAFU competition. The Black Satellites seem to have redeemed themselves, beating Niger by 2-0 after they drew their first game with Benin 2-2. And so things are looking a bit good for Desmond Affair's men, and they've calmed down the situation at least for now. And then there's also more action in the Ghana Premier League. Asante Kotoko returned to action. Heart of Oak back to default settings as they drew 0-0 away to Dreams FC. And what a weekend of Premier League football. Arsenal losing, Billy Shen sad, and Manchester City leaving it late. Liverpool proving that they are once again up there as they retain their spot on the top of the English Premier League table. So there's a lot to talk about today. You do want to stay with us. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back from that quick break. You're still live here on Sports Ultras. You can stream live on Facebook at 3FM 92.7. And just as promised, I'm joined by my guests, very familiar faces, Billy Shen and then Fifi Forsen, also known as Efson. Bill, how was your weekend? How are you feeling? You don't look too happy.
Black Stars. Black Stars already gave me a bad week, and then Arsenal to loses in the weekend. Well, why?
You know, I have a parable for you. What shall it profit a man to get malaria and miss 2-0 defeat to Sudan only to go and get another 2-0 this time at the Vitality? What shall it profit a man, Billy Shen, I ask you? Because in the end, you chop the 2 goals. Things for you never lost.
If I speak, I'm in big trouble, please.
that was just a joke, I beg. But yeah, it's good to have you guys here. Efson, how are you feeling? Good weekend for you?
You're managing, yeah. Fantastic weekend.
You can't really tell how your weekend goes till your team plays. And you know, Efson is a bit confused because Barcelona are now about to play.
Hansi Flick ball. Easy win. Gabi is back. Omo is back. Everybody's back. Fit and ready.
Gabi is back, but it's Eric Garcia who starts in midfield.
We don't care who starts. As far as we have Hansi Flick on the bench,
yeah.
Already we have one goal in the bag.
Yeah.
Before even the game starts.
Yeah.
So that's one goal in the bag. So we have to end up collecting like 5 or 6 today.
Wow. Yeah, Sevilla have not been good.
Yeah.
They've not been good at all this season.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyways, so let's head into it and start from the camp of the Black Stars. Very, very interesting weekend. Personally, I saw this coming. I don't know whether you guys also did. Because it's not the first time that we're seeing this, that Black Stars players come, perform not so well, and then they go back to their clubs and all of a sudden they're world beaters. We've seen that in maybe the degree this time is much higher because it was a lot more players involved in goals, especially in the Premier League and then in La Liga as well, even across other leagues in Europe. First question to you, Bill, is does it come as a surprise to you to see the players do this? And do you think it's deliberate?
It's not surprising anymore. Really is not. I think we've been at it over and over again that these players show very good form in Europe, but when they come to the Black Stars, it's a different issue. We've made that case about Iñaki. We've made that case about Semenyo. Kudus a number of times too, because this year he hasn't really been good for the Black Stars. After Egypt, of course, which he did well against Egypt, scoring the brace. But after that, it's not really been good. Even Djiku is now Mourinho's child. But even he is not doing well. Salisu, we saw him at Monaco. And, I mean, we were praising him. He's fit. He's in the best shape of his life. And he's even scoring in Champions League. Comes to Ghana and Abdul Rahman beats him in a foot race. And basically let him look like a League 3 defender. It's... I can't put my finger on it as to why this is happening. Because there are a number of factors. One could be the coach and how he sets his team up and how he sets the players up to try and link up. Because again, for example, we bash Thomas Partey a lot because even when he's in a Black Star squad, because the perception is that he doesn't perform as well in the Black Stars as compared to Arsenal. But then again, in an Arsenal system, there are lots of players running in front of him and putting themselves in positions where he can put a very good pass and it looks all good. And Arteta trusts him in such a way that he can intercept, he can break up play and all of that. The system is there for him to succeed. Is it the same in Ghana? I doubt it. Is the system at Athletic Bilbao for Iñaki Williams to succeed the same in Ghana? Absolutely doubt it too. Even Jordan Ayew, is it the same? I don't think so. I mean, we are not going to talk about him complaining to Kwesi Appiah because we don't know what he said. But it's become more of a theme that the players have skill sets, but it doesn't look like they've been placed in a way where their skill sets can be maximized for the team to get results. And that is a huge concern. Very huge. And of course, people have talked about passion, about commitment. Yeah, maybe we are not seeing that too. Because there's been instances where the Black Stars will concede, the players are already acting like there's nothing to lose. They're not behind. They don't have to score. We've seen instances. But there's also that instance where they have not been pleased in such ways where their skill sets, their profiles are maximized. And that is a huge problem for me. Mm. Very huge problem. Because it's a recipe for disaster. If you stand your ground and you want, you have a system where you want to play, you know the players or the profiles to fit that system. That would mean some players will be sacrificed, even if, in the eyes of the people, they are so great and can do some things. That is what the best coaches in the world do. Arteta can easily decide to sacrifice Aubameyang because he was messing up as captain, even when Aubameyang was scoring goals for Arsenal. He decided to sacrifice Guendouzi when he came first and he was one of the best midfielders in Arsenal's team, even though he was so young, because he had a system. He sacrificed Lucas Torreira because he had a system. So why aren't we seeing that? Where you are basically jamming up so many ingredients but are not aligning the ingredients to the best of the abilities for the meal to be sweet or for the meal to be good. I feel that is a case that we should really, really scrutinize. We should really ask questions. And again, what is really the system of the Black Stars? Let me go further. What's the DNA? I can't tell what the DNA is. In fact, we've not really been given access to the book to even read what the DNA is.
I can send it to you.
Please send it to me. But can you tell me what the DNA is?
It's supposed to be a mixture of... The idea is not a system per se, but we're supposed to dominate games. We're supposed to impose ourselves. We're supposed to create environment where our players can express themselves. But the most important thing is that we need to set up in a way that we want to dominate, have the upper hand. And so, yeah, I think that's basically what I remember. It's not a formation thing. It's more of a how we approach games.
You approach games. Are we seeing that?
Nope.
Okay. So, basically, we are not translating the DNA the way it should. then what's the point?
The man that wrote the DNA crowd, where is he?
Yeah, I mean, he's been let go. He's been let go. And he left a document for us, which we can't even execute. So, I mean, well, it's frustrating.
Yeah. Welcome back. You're still live here on Sports Ultras on 3FM 92.7. We're talking about the Black Stars. Yes. The players, they've been, all of a sudden, they look like they're good again. But in the period of 1 week against Sudan, they could even get a goal against Kwesi Appiah Sudan. And then right after the break, we see the way it happened was too funny. Kudu scored, Inaki comes in with the brace, and then Fatawu assists, Jordan scores. And
Osman scores. Osman.
Yeah. Osman scores in the evening, and then even today, Babar Aman has scored, but he wasn't part of the squad. And then Gideon Mensah has also assisted.
Hey!
And, I mean, the list goes on and on. There are even players who are not in the Black Stars yet, like Edmond Bedu, Red Bull Salzburg, who also scored. But it's been a good weekend. And I think the biggest indication or the biggest takeaway for me this weekend is that it has never been about quality. Look, there are, it's fair that every national team sees this period, goes down a bit before it comes up. It's happened to a number of them. Ivory Coast, Nigeria, yeah. Egypt. Everyone goes through this tough period. What makes it harder is in these periods, when you look at the talent pool that you have and you're not seeing anyone, nobody good enough, nobody playing the top league, mm-hmm. and you're wondering who's going to be your savior. How are things going to change for you? That type of situation, there's really no hope. But for Ghana, I think like our situation is very, very different. I look at the pool of players we have, and there's so much hope. I don't think in the last 10, 12 years, we've had this number of active players in the top five European leagues who are not just playing a part, but actively being important players in their team. And I think this weekend was a very good reminder mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. we have quality. I hear talk about passion and commitment. And I ask anybody who says that, you sitting at home, do you think you want to watch Ghana at an AFCON more than Kudus wants to play at an AFCON? Or Inaki Williams? Look, do you think Inaki didn't see what Nico did for Spain and doesn't want to replicate our Ghana? Mm-hmm. Do you know the immense... Look, forget about club football. Look at Messi. Mm-hmm. Where did he get his biggest joy? What didn't Messi win with Barcelona? Mm-hmm. Your biggest joy as a player comes from your national pride. And there's no play... Look, even whenever you speak to any player, you ask them of their idol, they would mention a Ghanaian player first. These guys grew up watching the national team and want to play in the... It is never a question of passion. Everyone understands the privilege that they have.
Yeah.
To represent this big country... It's no joke.
Yeah.
But I don't think it is passion and commitment. Look, if that's the same case, then what would you say about Messi before Copa America came in 2021?
Yeah.
What didn't Argentines say about Messi? Mm-hmm. That he only cares about Barcelona and he doesn't do the same for Argentina. When you're not winning, people will say everything else. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine people questioning Messi's passion and commitment for Argentina
yeah.
when he wasn't winning?
Yeah.
But now, all of a sudden, because he's winning, he's
yeah.
passionate.
Yeah.
No, he's not. The only thing that changed was that they got a coach who understands the system and how to get the best of the players that they had. Mm-hmm. Scaloni came in and changed absolutely everything.
Yeah.
It's the same way. One factor can change with this national team mm-hmm. and all of a sudden, everything will take again. And everyone will forget about passion conversations.
Yeah.
I don't think it's an issue of passion. And commitment at all. Mm-hmm. At all. I just think we need... Look at the goals that they scored this weekend.
Yeah.
We had more than 25 corners against Sudan in 2 games. Who would give Jordan that pass on the edge of the box that Harry Winks intelligently saw and gave it to him?
Yeah, no one.
Who would try and find Inaki in the box consistently like Bilbao do? Even Kudus himself, how many times do we create opportunities for him like the goals that he scores at West Ham? Mm-hmm. Who is moving inside the box? Who is telling Fatal to be going down the line? Who is telling who to do what? And if you watch Salisu at Monaco, why would you even want to play him as a defender who is literally on the halfway line and is playing a high line and has so much distance to cover.
Mm-hmm.
That's not his strength. Mm-hmm. It's almost like telling Maguire to play a high line.
Yeah.
There are defenders who defend better in when they are deeper. Yeah. There are some who defend better on the high line. You need to understand the strength of your players. And I think that's the biggest difference here. Coaches outside there understand the strength of their players and then they bring the most out of him by doing this understanding. Here, it's almost like you just put everything together. Mm-hmm. The same, look, the greatest player of all time, Lionel Messi, was struggling in Argentina.
Mm-hmm.
It's not because he wasn't good, because the system wasn't good. And you see, no matter how good you are, no matter how good, if Messi could not survive a system, Kudus cannot. Nobody in this world of football can survive any system that's not good.
Yeah.
So till we find a way that we bring the best out of our players, the situation there, to me, to continue happening. Fifi, I don't know whether you agree with me. I think you believe that the players should do more.
Yeah, I've been very critical of the players
yeah.
in the last 2 weeks. I've said that irrespective of what happens off the field, I expect them to show more.
Yeah.
But from what has happened this week, you have to just admit that it's clearly a system problem. And I just feel what Utuado said back in August is transmitting now. And I...
Can you remind us?
He said national team football is difficult. National team, coaching at national team is difficult because the players come from all over the world,
yeah.
come from different philosophies and all that. And from what I've seen this week, it just clearly tells me that maybe Otto is not really a national team coach. Maybe he's more accustomed to club football.
Like Hansi Flick?
Of course.
Because you've seen good coaches, yeah.
Yeah, because I just feel national team and club football are very different. And if you look at Otto's role at Dortmund, he was more involved with the talent aspect of the players. He knew how to scout the best players and all that. But he comes to the national team and he basically has to do a lot of things. He has to map out the strategy, the tactics and all that. But you could clearly see that he falls short at some point. As you rightly mentioned, you have to know the profile of the players you invite. Because one thing that struck me from the two games against Sudan was that when the going got tough and when he needed a goal, he brought in a player who received a late call-up. That was Michael Baidu.
Mm-hmm.
And I was asking myself, so what if Partey hadn't pulled out? Or what if, because clearly, I think Baidu, the GFA statement said Baidu was just coming to replace Partey.
Yeah.
So what if Partey hadn't pulled out? What would he have done? And I've said that the system problem also transmits, and it also has to do with the management problem from the top. Because after the AFCON, we came to conclusion that, okay, the technical team wasn't good. And this is a technical team that was headed by a former Premier League manager.
Yeah.
Chris Hughton.
Yeah.
We had George Boateng.
Yeah.
We had Masoud Doudou Dramani.
Yeah.
And the goalkeeper's trainer, I believe, was Richard Kingston.
Yeah.
And I think a week after the AFCON, the committee that was put in place, they came up with 5 qualifications. And if you remember, one of the qualifications was 15 years experience.
Yeah.
Having the highest coaching license.
Yeah.
And also being a proven winner.
Yes.
Proven winner between national and club football.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked myself, how did Otto manage to secure this job? Unless the GFA wants to tell Esther, and I think they tried to explain it, and they explained it in a way that for me sort to just confirm that maybe they didn't get the applicants they were hoping for.
Didn't they say they had
like over 200?
Yeah,
no, you can have over 200, but who were they? You see, because the moment I feel I've gone through the qualifications again, and I feel the management committee at that time that were tasked to appoint a new coach at that time, I feel they did a thorough analysis of why the Blasters failed.
Mm-hmm.
And they came out with those 5 qualifications. Because if you look at those 5 qualifications, Onoreku, if they are stick to that, I tell you, we will not be losing to Sudan. Because if you want a proven winner, someone who knows, who has 15 years experience, Otto has, let's say Otto started coaching in 2010. That's 14 years experience. Fair enough. He has, what's the name? He has the UEFA Pro license. That's the highest, yeah. I believe, in the coaching certification.
Yeah.
That's fair. He has the qualification.
Yeah.
But what did the GFA say when they appointed Otto? They said Otto excelled. He was excellent during the interview process. Already that defeats the qualification that they put out there. Meaning they snubbed what they put out there and chose the manager based on what his excellence during the interview. And I feel it was just a matter of time that this was going to backfire. And for me, I just also think Otto's second term has not been encouraging, has not been impressive because of his backroom staff. Yeah, because Ureku, in his first stint, he had George Wharton.
He had Chris.
He had Didi Dramani.
He had Chris.
He had Chris Hutton as technical director.
Yeah.
He had Oledi. These are four top brains.
Yeah.
And what did we give to him? Joseph.
John Pencil.
John Pencil. Lawman, I believe the name.
Yeah, Lawman.
And Fatou Daouda.
Yeah.
Fatou Daouda actually had to quit Sudan.
Yeah.
To come and take this job.
Yeah.
Meaning they didn't have anyone available, or they didn't even want to go back to Oledi. So if you said the previous technical team wasn't good enough, what shows this technical team is an upgrade to what you sacked?
Mm-hmm.
It's clearly not an upgrade. There's no way you can tell me, you can compare Pencil's coaching to George Wharton. Wharton is ahead of Pencil.
Mm-hmm.
What about Olele and Fatou?
Olele is ahead of Fatou. And it was evident during their playing time. We saw how both played for the national team.
Yeah.
So clearly, we downgraded. And when they're going guest off, who does Otto rely on?
Lawman.
If he looks back, who is he mm-hmm. going to consult? Let's be fair, because I feel Otto, in the second stint, the management didn't do the best for him.
Yeah.
That's for me. But I also feel he has to take majority, he has to take majority of the blame, because he has been there before. For someone who has been there before, you shouldn't be struggling. Because majority of these players, you worked with them at the 2022 World Cup.
Yeah.
You worked with Jiku, you worked with Salisu, you worked with Kudus, you worked with a lot of these guys. So how come it's literally the same squad, you can't find the right system this time around? And it's clearly a system problem. Because in the game against Sudan, in the second leg in Libya, there was a time when there was an instant when you were watching the game, you kept screaming, where are the options? Where are the midfielders? When this guy, this Kaliari, I believe, the Ibrahim Suleiman,
yeah.
He had the ball in the middle and he held on to the ball for like 50 seconds. He had no option, no one to pass to. You see, so this is what we have to address. And I feel the management have done it a great disservice. I just feel, I don't want to generalize the issue. I don't want to say Ghana football is sinking and all those, because it is clearly, the Ghana football is not sinking. I've maintained it. It is clearly a Black Stars problem. And the management are failing us because they appoint the coaches. Because if I should take you back to 2019, you sacked Kwesi Appiah. You said you wanted an upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
You wanted to step up the national team. You sacked Kwesi Appiah and you bring in CK Akono.
Mm-hmm.
To be fair, they corrected it. They brought in Milo.
Yeah.
But it turned out that Milo...
Me what?
No, but no.
Milo, the Milo, the no. Second coming of Milo...
Yeah, I understand you, but on the face
is
of...
It's never an upgrade on CK Akono.
No. To be fair, for what he had
in
done...
In terms of high-profile jobs, what CK Akono had done with Kotoko 7 years ago, Milo after... Before Blasters, Milo was
saying.
No one.
That's what I'm
after
saying.
Blasters, Milo was no one.
No, but to be fair, on his CV, he had led it to the quarterfinals.
Okay, wait.
So I'm saying, so let's, it turned
that,
out to
that
be
was,
that.
That was how many years ago? Was
yeah,
like that 13,
was
14
yeah, so
years
I'm,
ago?
That's what I'm saying, that it turned out to be that Milo had lost touch with reality.
Yeah.
He had lost touch with the game. The game had left him
behind.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we brought in Otto.
Mm-hmm.
No, Chris.
No, we brought in O2. After Milo, we brought in O2 for the World Cup.
Ah, okay, yeah.
He did an encouraging job. He did well. And I would have said that he did an encouraging job because of the backroom staff, because of the people we put behind him, the supporting cast.
Yeah. Had a good spot.
For Hilton, I just feel it was never going to work for Hilton as the head coach because clearly he didn't even have the support of the people at the top.
So, you see, if you get one managerial appointment wrong,
yeah,
it's fair. But how can you get it wrong for 3-4 times? Because who in their right senses watches Chris Hughton's coaching career and decides that?
So this is why I mentioned that after Hughton, they knew they had to get the second appointment absolutely right. Because that's why they put out the qualifications. That thing wasn't a fluke. They knew what they were doing. They had done a detailed analysis. And they realize
why the number 15, to be honest? Because if you're strictly going by those requirements, there'll be less than 10 coaches available for the job.
No, but I've said that. No, but at that point, yeah, I feel that's what we needed. We needed a serial win. We needed someone who had won it before to come in. Because if you exit the AFCON back-to-back group stages, clearly you need an upgrade. You need to upgrade.
No, but you see, we need to hold these people accountable, Weston.
Yeah, I'm holding them accountable.
In these 5 years, we've had managers like Hervé Renard, Hugo Bruce, all become available.
Yeah.
And also, interest.
Yeah.
And you see, my point is that those years ago, they were attracted to the job because of the pedigree of Ghana.
Yeah.
The more we are failing, the more these jobs move further away from us. Look, Hervé Renard declined Nigeria. Nigeria in this state with all their strikers, what makes us think you come to Ghana? The lower you drop him, the more further you move away from these high-profile coaches. Nobody wants to associate himself with failure. What shows I can save a sinking ship that has seen 4 or 5 coaches try and it doesn't work? That's what I'm saying, that it was critical. It was critical that we got this one right. At least for the sanity of the Black Stars, just maintain normal standard. Go back to round of 16 of AFCON, quarterfinal.
Yeah.
Show something. Show some good potential.
Yeah.
Now, if you don't qualify for AFCON, you are in the gutters. Which coach will take this job? Nobody. It's almost become like the Manchester United job.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to go there.
Yeah.
It's not because they are afraid, but it just doesn't make sense. If you read, look, you think Tuchel wouldn't have loved to go there? Man United is a huge club, but everything seems like years ago. And the problem seems so huge that you go there thinking, that can I really fix it? Should I take that risk? And at a point, these coaches think of themselves. Hey, what if I go and I fail? It's a monumental failure because, you know, this is a very big club or this is a very big country. They don't want to stain their CVs.
Yeah.
Right now, if you like, sack Otto and put a job available, you will be getting Abubakar Ouattara them applying. Seriously. No, at least we should be.
Yeah, at least.
We should be beating Niger.
So, Rico, I'm saying that if you want to attract the heavy runners, you have to pay more.
At least 100.
And now say let's be honest with ourselves. There's no way Hervé Renard is going to bottle an AFCON qualification. He's not going to bottle an AFCON qualification. He's going to qualify with ease in a group that has Angola, Niger, and Sudan. He's going to qualify with ease.
Welcome back. It's still live here on Sports Ultras on 3FM 92.7. It was getting pretty heated with regards to the Black Stars and the players. I think, Bill, you wanted to make a point before we went on the break.
Yeah, I mean, the coaches matter. I think now I'm thinking that the management are probably considering to maybe let Otto go. But again, it would be a very big indictment on them.
Not them. One on Mark Addo.
Oh, and Ket.
No. This one I want to exclude Ket.
Ah, okay. So Mark Addo.
Ket gave executive power
to Mark Addo
to lead the team to search for our coaches on about 3 different occasions.
Three.
I'll get you the exact I'm coming, I wrote it down.
Hey.
I'll get you the exact times that
the Mark Addo, Charlie, no.
Because you see
I'm trying to understand why. If you are tasking like a group, only one of them is a technical head out of 5. Meaning,
how does Mark Addo have any experience in choosing a coach?
Meaning, like 4 voices versus 1. even if the technical head has like a very good
this time
idea,
I had Professor Mintai.
Yes, he was the only technical head in the five.
So if there's a vote,
yes, they will outweigh him easily. So I think the process itself is flawed. If you are going to pick a committee, and also if you pick a coach, what I understand is from top clubs, when you are picking the coach will bring some of his backroom staff himself, does he not? He will bring some. Even if he doesn't bring all, he will bring some. And he'll keep one who maybe has been with the team for a long time and, you know, wants the transition to be smooth and all of that. Was there that sort of room given to Otuado or not? That's also concerning for me. So I think if you let him go now, see, no coach who is coming right now is taking Ghana to the AFCON unless Sudan magically loses the two matches.
And should have done something when it was in your hands.
Yes, yeah, now it's not in your hands anymore. So if you let him go now, I think it would just be you are just wasting your case, basically. And no sensible coach wants to take that job.
At this time.
Yeah, nobody wants to take it. So I think at this point you stick with him. You have no choice.
For the case of Mark Addo, he brought in Chris Hughton.
Uh-huh.
He brought in Otuado. In fact, he led the committee brought in Chris Hughton.
Yeah.
Brought Otuado for the first spell, brought Otuado for the second spell, was also the chairman for the AFCON in January that we went to play.
Yeah.
And then also the World Cup. All of them complete failures.
Otto Hilton back to E.
No, but you see, if I give you three chances and your best is Otto Hilton and Otto again, and you're wabong.
Yeah.
Wabong, seriously.
I mean it's an indictment on him.
Yeah.
A very big one, to be honest. It doesn't look good.
But
then again, process is flawed because if he was given the power to lead a 5-member committee, he should have made at least 3 technical heads. 3 technical heads.
Because you see,
should have made 3
in this type of
instead of making 1.
I agree with you 100% because you see, when you're looking for a coach, that 15 years thing is bogus. It is immaterial. A coach can have 40 years experience, be a proven winner, and not be the right coach for Ghana in this state. The number one on the list when you're looking for a coach shouldn't be proven winner and 50. Dead that talk of winning AFCON. You can't even go to knockouts round. You want to win AFCON and you're looking for a coach, your first thing is proven winner. No,
Maresca is out.
Oh yeah, look, when there's a reason why Chelsea went for a coach like Maresca.
Yeah.
You are nowhere near winning trophies at the moment. You need to now build your empire.
Yeah.
What does Ghana have right now?
Yeah.
Young players.
Yeah.
Who need guidance, are fast, pacey, want to attack.
Yeah.
Take your DNA, your so-called DNA. Look at the strength of the players that you have.
Yeah.
And then envision what you want to achieve.
Yeah.
That is how you choose a coach. Not nonsense 5-pointer, disciplinarian and today. Disciplinarian and Otuado came first game, 3 red cards. How does I even, who is a disciplinarian? Tell me, Bill. Which coach right now said, how do you even categorize that?
Yeah,
it is all formality. This is not what. And you see, until you change the process, we'll keep on bringing bombo coaches and we'll waste this era that we have. We'll waste this generation of young players. Look at how blessed. Look, do you remember the 2021 AFCON squad, Bill?
Yeah.
Look, at that point, when we got out of the round of 16, I was actually scared. If these Wakaso boys retire and things, who do we have? That was the only moment that I thought that maybe we actually don't have a future. And somewhere, somehow, the football gods have blessed us with so many talents sprinkled all across the universe, not even the globe. We have players in Mars and things.
Yeah.
If you go and ask, they are from Ghana.
Yeah, from Ghana.
Look, there are so many. And there's even a bigger pool of players who are dual nationals.
Yeah.
Who we can even tap into, because that's not a sin.
Yeah.
There are Ghanaians that can play for Ghana by the law. You go by the law.
Yeah.
And we have this good era, and we are listing 1, 2, 3, 4. Do you think that is what the process is? Just incredibly flawed.
And the money the expenses. You remember when they brought Milo back? You remember I went back in time to after Milo left the first time. They had spent over $4 million. So now imagine
the
how
CBRS
much...
The CBRS package.
Yes, now imagine how much more they've spent in addition.
And you see, that $50,000 that, as you say, I isn't to save. When you look at the money you've wasted on appointing coaches,
exactly.
In you the see, end, you could you have see. Just added some $20,000 to get a world-class coach.
Yes.
Simple.
Exactly.
But no, now I need a real figure on how much we've wasted.
This time I'll take time. Don't worry. I'll take time. We'll go into it.
Because you see, in the end, it's becoming something.
We'll go into it. Don't worry.
You are losing way more.
It. It's the reason when
there'll be a lot now.
When people say we have to change everything, build a team for the next 6-5 years. No. See, we can't waste Kudus prime.
Mm-hmm.
Kudus is 24.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes,
he's one of our most talented footballers in recent years.
Yeah. So he played one AFCON. Kudus hasn't played a knockout game for the Black AFCON. Stars yet.
Hey,
Kudus. Kudus started playing for Ghana 2019. You've not even given him a knockout game.
Yeah, this generation, we can't waste it. I just feel when this is why when Otto said we are stuck in the past and the current generation we can't compare. No. Is absolutely wrong, because if you have players playing week in week out, Asian generation, how many players were playing in the Premier League?
What's like some 3, 4, 5?
Yeah, I think that
at that time Muntari, Asian himself, and
Prince KP.
Had he come to the Premier League?
No, KP
came later. It depends on the specific year.
Yeah.
But he came to pass through Portsmouth.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I don't think there's ever been a period where we have 7-8 Ghanaians starting the Premier League.
No, I think that's a bit much. Okay, so there was that 2010-11 period where there was Jan, there was Richard Kingston, there was John Mensah, there was ACN himself, there was, I think, Sule too, as well.
No, Sule would have been in Italy by then, no?
2010.
2010.
Yeah, you won the Champions League.
That basically was Italy. Yeah. Okay, so there were like 5...
Yeah, so 7-8.
Yeah, like 5.
And then you're looking at now it's 7-8.
We had, but
even in France, Ligue 1, we have like 7.
Recently, we had about 10 or 11. The likes of Amati were all in the Premier League.
So there's no, you
can't convince me that, okay, you have to change everything, sack the play. No. Not at all. We have to get the process right. Bring in someone who can get this players playing at the level we expect of.
Yeah.
Because there's no way you can tell me Salisu is a bad defender.
He's not.
How can someone make Champions League team of the week? Then next week he can't defend against Sudan. What are you telling me?
Travesty.
And you see, the point has been made that, yes, the Football Association are not doing their job as people would have expected. But as you mentioned, the power of a good coach can make you forget a lot of things.
Yeah.
Look, Nigeria FA, what issues have they not had? Argentina FA.
Yeah.
Look, a lot of FAs have had issues with their countries.
That comes to the supporting cast that I mentioned earlier. Because
I'm
looking at Scaloni's backroom staff.
Yeah.
Pablo Aimar had a stint with the Argentina under 17 team.
Mm-hmm.
Walter Samuel has been in and out of the national team.
Yeah.
And Roberto Ayala, he had a stint with the under 20 team.
Yeah.
So you could clearly see that there's a process. And you see, for someone like Ayala, he had the opportunity to work with these young players who were instrumental in Argentina winning the World Cup.
Yeah.
Same applies to Ayala also. So, you see, they know the boys right from the onset. But what do we have? Uruku, I'm being too critical. And maybe people will say,
I hate someone.
No, you're not.
But let's be fair to ourselves. Even when they appointed CK Akono, who did they give CK Akono? David Duncan. That's a top coach.
Yeah, top local coach.
Top coach. We all praised Elastete for the under 2009 victory. But who brought up most of these boys? David Duncan's team in 2007. 2005 and 17, I believe. He brought up a lot of these guys. And they progressed really well to the national team, to the under 20, and they conquered the world.
Yeah.
You know what?
Partey is not. Partey doesn't want to play. He chooses. I don't think that is true. There were instances where he was injured. He had just returned to fitness, and he took his personal trainer, a fitness trainer from Arsenal, twice, to the Black Star squad to come and monitor his progress as he please. Twice.
I think we have another caller. Hi, can you hear me? Oh, I think we lost. Yeah.
Twice. Yeah. But this is not an issue of him not being committed or him choosing. See, he is very committed. I think he's very committed to just recover from injury, not even having played for Arsenal. And you invite one of the fitness trainers of Arsenal to come with you. There was a time during the camp, I saw him and the trainer. He was, every training session, he was around the team, watching Partey closely, making sure that Charlie, this guy doesn't get injured, and all of that. If he's not committed enough to want to play, he wouldn't bring a trainer to come and watch him. He wouldn't. So I think in this case, please, let's be a bit mindful. I think going at him in that way, you can say maybe performances haven't been great and he will need to improve, but saying that he chooses what time he likes to come to the team, I beg you, please, let's not run that narrative.
Look, this passion commitment talk keeps on dragging. And I'm saying, you mentioned Andrea Yuba. What Andrea Yuba, but when they when Mozambique knocked us out of the AFCON, when they passionate enough to play in Okara, what are you saying that?
Babara wasn't part of the AFCON.
No, but go back to whatever tournaments Baba has played. Ghana lost.
The World Cup day.
Ghana doesn't lose any match because of passion, my brother. Passion commitment.
I understand the points the callers are making about passion and commitment and all that. I think they want to see more from the players.
No, they don't want to see more. They just want to see the team win.
No, they want to see more.
No, they just want to see the team win. Only just want to see the team win.
Yeah, but I know. We've watched games that we didn't win, but we were impressed with the level of commitment shown.
Like which game? In a national team setup, it's all about winning.
No. I think even
Ivory Coast were not that good at the AFCON. They just won, and the fans were happy.
But the players wanted it more, because if they had been knocked out in the group stage, the players were going to take the
blame. Perfect example.
The Ivory Coast is a perfect example.
The players were going to take the blame. So the two games that they had MSFI sitting on the bench, he was assistant coach then. Yeah. So they didn't love Ivory Coast then. They didn't have passion in the first two games. All of a sudden, they found passion from nowhere when MSFI came and they won the AFCON. Yeah. What are you telling me? Yeah. That they didn't know they have to love Ivory Coast. They didn't know what it meant to host an AFCON.
No,
yeah.
But I'm saying that.
It's just not passion. Just teach them. Thank you for bringing the Ivory Coast one. That's the perfect example. Then this passion commitment talk. Ivory Coast players were passionate from the beginning of the AFCON. They were just not good enough and well coached in this to that group stage. That's why they couldn't win. It's not like they were not passionate about Ivory Coast. All of a sudden, knockout round, they look different and are passionate. Yeah. No, they were just more organized. That's it. That's football. That's national team. You can't teach someone to love their country, FC.
But the players wanted it more.
Which players?
But
the group stage, they didn't want it more.
They were.
So why were they losing to Equatorial Guinea?
You saw their reaction. You were at the stadium. When they lost 4-0 to Equatorial, you saw their reaction.
They were going to be knocked out if they didn't sack their coach.
You saw their reaction.
Okay, let me ask you this question.
You saw their reaction first. You saw their reaction.
But the Black Stars, what was their reaction? When they lose.
Compared to these boys, what was the reaction?
I don't understand. What are you comparing?
No, I'm saying compared to. You saw Diakite. Diakite broke down. He was crying.
I don't understand.
You can't laugh, smiling.
Are you in the Ivory Coast dressing room?
I support your point about system and all that, the technical thing getting it wrong and everything. But just for the players who also have some balls, they should also throw it more. They should play with more passion and more commitment.
These guys,
I've said that.
You know why I hate this passion commitment? Because you can't measure it.
How do you
measure someone? So if the player cries, he's passionate. No, he's more passionate than someone who doesn't cry.
You made a point that the players want to win. The players want to win it more for themselves.
Of course.
But they've not showed it.
How?
Because after the AFCON, everybody released a statement.
Who?
And what has happened after the statement? Everybody apologized.
What is apology?
No, they all apologized. And you see,
if your team is not good enough, you can release apology.
There's one point in every apology. Everybody reserved the line saying, we are going to improve. You're going to do better. You're going to play with more commitment and all that. They promised. It was a pledge.
How many times did Messi have to promise Argentina before he finally won it? The promise that you come, if Scaloni didn't come, Manca till date, he still promised.
But you see, you can't measure.
I'm saying, you remember when Scaloni came and then Emi Martinez came? It's all about quality.
No, but I'm saying,
national team. Imagine Argentina without Emi Martinez and Scaloni.
Argentina, when they were
what
bad.
What is passion? They didn't have passion.
Argentina's poor run that we all say they were bad and all that. They were reaching finals back to back. But the pedigree of the country, a country that has produced Maradona, Kempes and all that, they were winning World Cups. So you, for Messi, the standard is to win the World Cup.
Yeah, that was the standard.
It is the reason we are angry over here. The Blaster standard
100%
limited to even this century is to at least reach a semi-finals of an AFCON.
It is not even that. Ghana has to win the AFCON. It's been long
over. That's what I'm saying. Limited to this century. The bare minimum is to reach a semi-finals of an AFCON.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you that since 2019, you have used 66 players. You have used 4 coaches. You can't tell me all of these guys lack passion and commitment. Yeah. It is too reduced. No, it is too simplistic to say that these guys lack passion and commitment. So in the end, to me, if I knew be our dog Ghana, just 5 years we can't find a player that loves Ghana. Why? How can you tell me it's about love?
You know, that's why you're bringing back the love.
Also shows in the way you play, right?
Yes,
because some of the chances.
That's at least you say you have passion.
Oh no. Of course, he has. Uh-huh. He plays with more. Halidou has shown. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, the aggression and all of that.
Currently, our best player in the Blasters right now is Halidou Seydou.
I'm coming.
And that's the problem. That's the major problem.
You see, that question was a trap.
It wasn't a trap.
Because Halidou is aggressive.
Yeah, it's aggressive.
Let me compare that. Inaki is the exact opposite. Yeah. Very calm, reserved. So the typical Ghanaian will say he's not committed and passionate.
Yeah.
If you are watching us right now and you disagree with me that Inaki is not passionate and he doesn't have commitment, go on your phone. Watch that last minute goal that he scored.
Yeah.
The header.
Yeah.
Look at how he celebrated that goal. And tell me that guy is not passionate about playing for Ghana and doesn't want to score more.
Google.
You think that guy doesn't want to score more?
Inaki, after Spanish Super Cup, Inaki's reaction after they lost to, but I think Real Madrid or one of those Super Cup that
Inaki has cried. He cried after the AFCON. I saw him outside the stadium. He cried. So what are you saying? He cried. He was one of the few players that cried. His eyes were red. Mixed zone. His eyes were red.
Oh
no! But you see, you cannot tell me that this guy. I would never believe it.
No, but
when he scored the goal, look at him there. The guy wanted to take off his shirt. He wanted to enter the crowd. Was hugging He was happy because he chose to play for Ghana because he wants to play for Ghana. Nobody forced him.
But there should be some level of consistency.
That's the conversation we must have.
After this game, only one person has apologized.
Kudus.
Yes.
Abi is on behalf of the team. He said on behalf of the team.
Captain. I'm saying that.
We don't want to be playing team.
No.
23.
Captain.
Kudus issued an apology. And do you know what I did that night? Mm. I was just
going to the
Instagram comments and I saw the players.
They were agreeing.
Fire. What stops you from also coming out to say, oh, we are sorry, blah, blah? Because, see, failing to qualify for an AFCON is a huge indictment.
We are waiting for when we don't qualify. We all drop statements.
Yeah,
but
probably.
It's good you mentioned Kudus. The red card, where did do you think...
He's frustrated.
Where is the frustration coming from?
I think he's frustrated with that one is clearly Western problem. I don't think he carried the national team burden to the game. Because when he started the game, you saw his performance, right?
Yeah.
It was it's just a clear frustration of West Ham system under Lopetegui.
The way they concede,
even the likes of Boeing. You see, you brought in all these players, and still Mikel Antonio is your top striker, and Sucek is in the middle. It's strange. You see,
that's strange.
I just feel they wanted to see some beautiful football, because if you sack David Moyes,
yeah,
and you bring
that's what you're a
former Real Madrid coach, you're communicating that you want to play good football,
yeah,
and you want to make the likes of Paquet. You have talent. The talent is there. So I think Kudus is frustrated because he doesn't understand how a team that has Paqueta, Bowen, himself, Guido Rodriguez, should always be at the back foot, even when they are playing Chelsea at home.
Ah, what do you mean by that?
They are always at the back foot. And these are players who want more of the ball. They want to see more possession, and they want to play, they want to have a feel of the ball more. So if they are not having it, they clearly grow frustrated.
Yeah.
In the first half, I was watching the game, in the first half, Kudus tracked back.
Mm-hmm.
Kudus tracked back, and he managed to help Wan-Bissaka win the ball. And just Wan-Bissaka had a simple task to just pass the ball to Kudus, who just gave the ball to the opponent. And Kudus stopped. He stopped running. He didn't do anything. And that led to a chance that Son Heung-min nearly scored. So I just feel the frustration is just for him, for club football, it's just at West Ham. And I feel with time they're going to get rid of Lopetegui because it's not working.
Were you surprised by Kudus' actions?
Very. Because he's only gotten a red card once before, and I don't even remember what led to the red card. But that aside, to slap Van de Ven and to also go at Pape Matasia like that. Why?
Oh, your fellow African brother.
Why? Why?
I don't know what happened yesterday, because when I was watching the game, I was just going through Snapchat and I saw a video that one of West Ham's old matches there. And let's say there was an altercation, the players were all in the middle, and the guy was recording his again. He said, "Ah, Nima boy, no, on Kubiana." He said, "Kudus on Kubiana."
Meaning he wasn't
like, there. Some. 10 minutes later, this happened, and Kudus was throwing his hands. I was like, "Ah, what?" such a coincidence. But I feel it's really a low blow for him, because you saw his reaction when he was sent off. He felt really disappointed and let down. He let his team down.
Yeah.
And right now, I'm hearing the ban could be extended.
More than a few matches.
Yes. And
look, when a player,
it could be a huge blow for him, because
I'm not even looking at this season for Kudus. Yeah, players make mistakes. You can get red cards for bad tackles and all of that.
Yeah.
I'm okay with having a high foot.
Yeah.
A shoulder. Something.
Yeah.
Something concerning football and getting a red card for it.
But that was
these type of things, it takes a lot to erase them off your CV.
Yeah.
If you want to erase this moment, now you have to come back and have the season of your life.
Yeah.
I say this because obviously Kudus's ambition or end goal is not at West Ham.
Of course.
If you want to play for a Real Madrid, a Barcelona, a Liverpool, and Arsenal, it's not just about how good you are as a footballer. It's the nitty-gritties.
Yeah.
That's why there are a lot of talented footballers that never get to play for big clubs.
Yeah.
It's all about how you react in certain situations. Because imagine, when you join these big clubs, you would have to go through this a lot more often. Your temperament, it's not even how you react to anger. It's about how you react to situations, pressure, playing at the Bernabeu, playing a Champions League final. You cannot afford to lose your head like this.
Yeah.
And for me, I was just a bit disappointed. Not because it happened, but in the manner in which it happened.
Yeah.
Once, twice, thrice. Nah, I just think that's one too many.
Oh, he's going to learn. I feel
No. It's not about he's going to learn. It was extremely bad. Some things. Yeah, like have you seen Messi or anybody reacting that way?
Yeah.
Like during a match, slap someone 3 times, kick someone.
He also got a red card.
Yeah, people get red cards. Yeah, he's been in stuff with Medell.
Yeah,
Copa America. But the way he did it. Kick twice, it's almost like the aggression is compounded, and that's why I want to believe that it's not just West Ham, it's something more.
Let's say, are you going to believe the report that he clashed with Lopetegui? Because I just
feel, at halftime, I think perhaps this one sort of validates in a way,
because the frustration had reached,
but you see, for me, it doesn't help because red cards are very, very look. When you are a footballer on the bench, you don't want to pray for an injury for you to get an opportunity.
Yeah.
But if someone gets a red card, at least you get a chance. The player is not hurt. Their health is intact.
Yeah.
So let me give you a situation right now. What if Soler comes into the team or Somerville comes into the team And in those 3-4 games that Kudus is absent, West Ham win all those games with a goal difference of 15 and don't concede.
But he's still
if Kudus comes back, do you think he will start?
He's still going to start.
No, he won't. If they put together. No, and you see, that's the danger about.
Kudus' case is different. We have to be fair. We have to understand that.
No, I'm just giving a hypothetical situation here.
It's a West Ham project.
I understand.
There's no way he's going to be on the bench.
No, I'm giving you a very hypothetical. Let me direct it to you.
The reason is he's not being played in his natural position.
No, but let me give you this scenario right now. As a coach, you are Lopetegui. You play Man United. You play all of these games after. Kudus is missing. You bring some of those left wing, Bowen right, Paqueta 10, Antonio. And all of a sudden, this front four clicks. And they start scoring and they win the games. It would be a bit unusual for...
Yeah, you see, so the reasonable thing to do is to stick with your winning team.
Yes.
But it's different here.
How is it different?
As a coach, you can't... Lopetegui clearly knows what he worked into. In this case, you can't continue playing your winning team because you always have to make way for the star boy.
But for me, that's the danger of a red card.
For the project player, for the player who has been brought in for huge money and the club wants to sell him off for what this release clause is really close for £100 million or something like that. So I just feel no matter what happens, I just feel he's going to come back stronger. He's going to come back into the team, maybe come from the bench for the first 2 or 3 games after the suspension is over. And he's going to, with time, he's going to settle. He's going to get back.
Yeah.
I understand your frustration. I understand you are disappointed and all that. But it happens. It's part of football. He wasn't getting more of the ball. And you see, that's what I'm saying. The profile of Kudus, the type of player he is, I'm not sure he's been in a team that are so negative. And you see, we were raising this point when he was going to join Moyes. And he was seeing more of the ball during Moyes' time. And for someone like Lopetegui, who's known for brilliant football, who's known for more possession-based football during his time with Spain, Real Madrid, and all that. It's a huge disaster what he has turned West Ham into. West Ham can't even string 4 or 5 passes together. Yesterday, I was watching the game. It was a complete dominance by Spurs. And if Spurs is dominating you, then there's a problem.
I think, yeah. Because you can't take away the fact that when he was Ajax, he was playing Champions League football. And that's what every player dreams of. You want to play in the Champions League. At this moment, Champions League looks like a very, very far... Europa League looks like a distant dream for West Ham. They probably have to think about their Premier League status first. But yeah, let's talk about, you know, the Premier League. Arsenal dropping points... Liverpool winning at home, maybe not the best performance, but getting in the points. Man City also struggling in front of goal. Has this weekend for you given you any further idea on the title race and how you think it would go, given the results that we witnessed?
Yeah, I feel Liverpool cannot be underestimated. I watched their Premier League prediction and you were bold enough to put Liverpool. I was skeptical at that point because I was like, Ancelotti coming in his first season, he's going to struggle. But one thing that we forgot was that Liverpool didn't lose any key player. They kept the core of the team. Salah is available. Van Dijk is available. There's Luis Diaz on the flanks. Jota. All these players are available. And these players have won it. They've won the Premier League before. They were key in Liverpool winning for the first time in over 2 decades. So there was no way we could have easily ruled them out. And even if we were being fair in our analysis, prior to the start of the season, last season it was a 3-horse race at some point, and they had a shout for it. So I just feel, for now, it's looking like a 2-horse race. Arsenal are beginning to be inconsistent. Because if you look at their performances, it's either someone is being sent off or the lack of discipline is going to affect them. The red cards are too much.
Yeah, the red cards are surprising. Eh?
Because we've seen this in Saliba's first red card in his career. We've seen Declan Rice pick up a red card. Trossard has picked up a red card. And they are not addressing the issue. They feel, Arsenal fans feel there's an agenda against them. But Trossard's red card was a clear red card.
Rice's red card was also a red card. And Saliba's score was right. So I just feel they have to focus on the football and get their players to be disciplined. The more they shift the blame on the referees, by the time they realize City and Liverpool are far gone.
I think right now it's 4 points and they face Liverpool points. Next. If they lose
another difficult game. If they lose that's 7 points and
that's a bit too much.
When you are 7 points adrift the top, it's too much
at this time, yeah.
Because we all know how the teams are playing. And Liverpool, after beating Chelsea, they feel okay, we are up there. If they beat Arsenal, they'll be more confident. Yeah. And all they have to do with City is just manage them, maybe win at Anfield, which they know how to do best, and get a point at Etihad, which they also know how to do best. So for currently, the momentum is clearly on the side of Liverpool. Manchester City are struggling. They have not replaced Rodri. Rodri is fantastic. He shows the back four really well and all that. Kovacic has come in, and Kovacic is a completely different player. His profile is different from that of Rodri. And you can clearly see that they are struggling to get Kovacic to play like Rodri. You can't get him to play like Rodri. So there's a clear miscommunication sometimes when they are playing. And Gundogan is also not playing at his best. So for Manchester City, they are just hanging on. If you look at Pep Guardiola's reaction to the last minute goal they scored today, I just feel he understands at this point we are not in our best shape. But we have to still be close to the title race. And maybe in the last 15 or 17 games, which is we all know how City do it, they get into their stride and push more for more wins and get to win the title. So I think City are just hanging on, and with time they're going to get better. But if they also lose focus, like the way Arsenal are trying to lose focus, Liverpool ran away with the title.
What a joyous end to the season that will be for the Reds. But that's how we'll be wrapping up today's edition of Sports Ultras live here on 3FM 92.7. We'll be bringing you more sports updates as well on our social media handles at 3SportsGH. Special thanks to Bill and then Efsin for joining me in studio. And also a very, very, very big thank you to all of those of you who called us to share your opinions as well on the Black Stars. Would continue to bring you the latest in the world of sports next week, Sunday at 6 p.m. So do make sure to tune in for some very good opinions and interesting discussions and analysis on the trending issues, especially when it comes to sports. My name is Aurelio Kwampofo, and we'll be back again next week, Sunday.